I recently heard a bhajan, the first line I'll chant. I am not a very good singer. It says, Mere Satguru Pakadi Ba, Nahi to main beh jata. Mere Satguru Pakadi Ba, Nahi to main beh jata. So the seeker is saying that if the guru had not held on to my hand, I would have been carried away in the current. So this shows us the importance of guru in our life. So they compare the world either to an ocean, you know, Bhavasagar mein meri naiya hai, my boat is in this huge ocean of this world, and the world is so huge. The earth is so big, and then earth is a very small planet. There are millions of such planets and stars. And in this whole world, how am I to get out? Just as if you fall in the ocean from the ship in the middle of the night and the ship goes away, you don't know which is north, which is south. You hardly know how to swim. And at that time, if a helicopter comes or a rope comes from the ship and they pick you up, you are saved. So that is the value of the guru, because in this world, we are lost. We don't know where to go. We don't know the direction. We don't know south or north. We don't know what is my goal, what is my duty. Or sometimes they compare the world to a fast-moving river. Just as a river, as the Kern River, you know, we find every year so many young lives get lost. Why? Because the current is so fast. And so the guru is like the lifeguard who comes in the boat and pulls this person out of the river. So we are in this rat race. We are being pulled along by the world. Everybody is doing one thing and we are running along with them. Like lemmings, you know, everybody's going, and then they all jump over the cliff and we also jump. Why? Because everybody's doing it. It must be right. But the guru is the one who shows us the path and lifts us out, and that's what the guru is. And in fact, in the Tuesday class, those of you who are attending the women's class on Tuesday, the next few topics are going to be related to the guru. They're talking about importance of guru, the qualities of a guru, how guru and God are one. All that is being done. They have a women's class on Tuesday, 12:30. So if anybody would be interested. So here in the Bhagavad Gita, the guru, of course, is the Lord himself. Krishna is teaching Arjuna. And then, of course, in our case, the guru is Swami Chinmayanandaji, Gurudev, who has translated the Sanskrit verses. Otherwise, we would not have been able to understand it. So far in this 18th chapter, the last few weeks, we have been talking about the three gunas, tamas, which is laziness, ignorance, rajas, which is passion, activity, greed, and sattva, which is purity and knowledge, and how we can evolve from tamas to rajas to sattva. And in the past few weeks, we talked about the different kinds of knowledge, tamasic knowledge, rajasic knowledge, sattvic knowledge, and the different kinds of actions, tamasic, rajasic, sattvic, different kinds of actors, people who work, tamasic, rajasic, sattvic, different kinds of understanding or intellect also. So today we are going to talk about dhriti, which is sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. Now the word dhriti, what is exactly we mean by dhriti? Dhriti comes from the root dhri. Dhri means to support, to uphold. So dhriti has actually many translations. It is translated as willpower, fortitude, persistence, consistency. What it means, dhriti means, dhriti first of all shows us our goal in life. What is my goal? What is my purpose? And it could be sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. It could be pure, impure or lazy. But once I have found my goal, then the ability to persistently stay on the path and despite obstacles to overcome them and not lose sight of my goal is called dhriti. So it is called fortitude, persistence and all of these examples. So let us do verse number 33. धृत्याया धारयते मनः प्राणेन्द्रियक्रियः योगेनाव्यभिचारिण्य धृति सा पार्थ सात्विकी। सो सा पार्थ सात्विकी, इन द एंड ही सेज ओ पार्थ धृति, दैट धृति इज सात्विक। विच वन? व्हाट इज सात्विक धृति? व्हाट इज सात्विक परसिस्टेंस? धृत्या यया धारयते, धारयते मीन्स कंट्रोल्स with dhriti, with again dhritya. Here it does not mean that fortitude, it means persistent, with persistent energy, with persistent strength. He controls what? Mana, prana, indriya. So the mind, the prana means the physiological functions, and the indriya, the sense organs. Kriya means the activity. So the activity of the mind, the activity of the physiological organs, and the activity of the sense organs and organs of action are controlled. So a person who controls his sense organs, why? Yogena. Yoga means, yoga comes from the word yujya. We have talked about that before. So why? Because he wants to attach to God. He wants to hold on to God. And that devotion for God is unswerving. It is not fluctuating. It is constant, unswerving devotion for the Lord. That dhriti is called satviki. So let us see what Gandhiji says about dhriti. He says that physical strength, strength, you know, people say, I have strength. So some people think strength means, you know, he can lift 250 pounds, he can bench press. Gandhiji said strength does not come from physical capacity. It comes from the inner will. So it is the inner will. You may be physically strong, but mentally you may be weak. And the moment a problem comes, an obstacle comes, you get disturbed. And we see in Gandhiji's life so many problems, so many obstacles. But he stayed firm in his belief, in his principles. So what is important in life is not IQ. You know, we emphasize a lot about IQ. We tell the children, you know, what is his IQ? And we tell them they should study hard and make themselves. That is good. But more important than that is to teach them to be strong in the face of obstacles, in the face of problems. Because problems will come. Even today's saying in the, I don't know, the board, I don't know how many of you read, but in joy, there will be, in life, there will be joys and sorrows, heat and cold, success and failure. So the ability to bear them and withstand them and continue on my life's journey despite obstacles. So the will is more important than the IQ. Here today, I thought we'll talk about the Ashtanga Yoga of Patanjali, which sort of is related to dhriti. And it's a very important subject. So Ashtanga means the yoga of Patanjali has 8 limbs. Now when we talk about yoga, people only think about the physical exercise, and that is one part of it. But there are 8 aspects, and we'll just briefly talk about that because that is related to our subject of dhriti. So as he said, control the mind, the sense organs, and the physiological pranas. So the first aspect of the yoga is yama. Yama is what? Control of the indriyas. Control of the 10. There are 10 indriyas. Dhyan indriyas and karma indriyas. So sense organs of 5 sense organs. And 5 organs of action. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue and taste. And the organs of action are hands, feet, speech, genital organs and organs of excretion. So a person should first of all control those. So a sattvic person or a person who is on this path of yoga should control. That means not seeing too much, not talking too much, not listening too much, not going on the internet, wasting time, not eating too much, not working too much, not speaking too much. So live a life of self-control and moderation. And that is the first requirement. In fact, Krishna in In the second chapter, when he talks about the man of wisdom, he talks about the example of the turtle. He says, Yada samharate chayam kurmonga niva sarvasha indriyani indriyarthebhyah tasya prajna pratishthitah. So who is a wise person? So he says, just as a turtle has, you know, five limbs, the four limbs and the head, the moment he sees any danger, what does he do? He withdraws the limbs and the head under the shell, and so he's protected. You know, fox or nobody can attack him because the shell is so hard. So similarly, a wise person, when his sense organs are sensing any danger, danger means something that is taking me away from my path. The danger does not mean physical danger, but a danger to my spiritual progress. This is not good for me. So he withdraws, so that he's not involved in doing useless things. His mind is centered on the higher. So he withdraws his sense organs. So that is called control of the indriyas, the sense organs and organs of action. Then the second aspect of yoga is niyama. Niyama is the inner control. See, the sense organs are outer, right? I control my eyes, I control my speech. But niyama is the inner control of the mind and intellect, so that the mind and intellect, even though I may not be indulging in something, like I say, I should not eat sweets from tomorrow, or this is Navratri, I should fast. But in the mind, I'm thinking food, 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 food. Then that fast is no use. Reason I'm fasting is for the Mother Goddess. So when I'm fasting, I should be thinking about God. Or at Easter, you know, I give up something, and I give up not because it is good for my spiritual progress. I give up for Jesus, or I give up for my... So the mind has to be controlled. So the sense organs, the organs of action. Then asana is the physical postures. And majority of the people go for yoga for the physical postures. Why? Because it is something to do. And that is good, because the physical postures give you health, flexibility. But it's not only that. The body, which is now healthy through yoga, has to be channeled in a higher purpose, in the purpose of service and the purpose of God realization. So that is the physical postures. Now the physical postures have to be accompanied by pranayama or breath control. And most yoga teachers not only teach the physical postures, but teach also proper breathing. And the breathing should be slow, should be, you know, controlled, should be careful. Because slow and measured breathing not only is good for health, it expands your lungs, because you're breathing, you know, instead of bleeding shallow, when you're breathing slow and deep, your lungs are expanded, it is healthy, but it also controls the mind. Those of you who meditate know that when you breathe deeply and when you observe your breath. So pranayama is a very important aspect. Now, these are the first four basic. Then the fifth, so after having controlled your mind, your sense organs, your breathing and all, making your body healthy, then Krishna says, then here of course Patanjali, but in this verse he says, then pratyahara, withdraw. So withdraw from things that are harmful, withdraw from things, just as an Olympic athlete, he is not going to indulge, you know, overindulging, late nights, overeating, eating the wrong things. He has to control his diet. His friends say, let's go out for a party. He'll say, no, tomorrow I have a big race. I'm not going to do that. So similarly, a spiritual seeker withdraws from any, either if it's a person who is taking me away from the spiritual path, I withdraw from him. A diet, an activity. So anything that is taking me away from the physical path, I withdraw from. And then after having withdrawn, I concentrate on the higher, concentrate on the Lord. That's why in this BMI chart, the body is enjoying the objects, the mind is enjoying the emotions, intellect is enjoying the thoughts. But the mind, which is out in the world of enjoyments, is withdrawn from them and turned to the higher. Again, with enjoyments does not mean that one should not eat, drink, have fun. We are not saying that. But that should not be your whole purpose. Majority of the people, as we'll talk about in Rajas, it is, you know, Swami Ishwarananda ji says, Picasso, Pio, khao, so. You know, that means drink, eat, and sleep. And that is the purpose of most of the. So, not that. So, live a life of control. Having done all that, then you are ready for meditation. So, people say, but you know, you are teaching meditation to everybody, you know, when people come the first time. The thing is that if you have done these things, your meditation will be better. But if you are meditating, all these things, it will help you. Meditation will help you to develop self-control, to help develop quietude of mind, to withdraw from the world. So they kind of feed upon each other. So it's not that it has to be 1, 2, 3, 4. They all together, one helps the other. Control the mind, control the senses. Control the breath, controls the mind. So they are all connected. So then you are ready for meditation. And then the final step of meditation is merger, where you become one with the Lord. So that's what Krishna says. So with dhriti, you control your senses, your mind, your intellect, and then turn the attention to me, to the Lord, with unswerving devotion, total devotion, not dependent on anything else, but the Lord alone is my goal. And there's a very, very beautiful story about Swami Vivekananda. You know, most of you know, but those of you who don't know, Swami Vivekananda ji was a great saint, great orator, and a very missionary, very powerful, who spread the message of Vedanta, not only to India, but he was the first one to come to the U.S. So in 1892, in the Parliament of Religions in Chicago, he came by ship, and actually first he addressed the congregation as brothers and sisters of America. So that was his idea, that we are all brothers and sisters. And that then his speech was so powerful that not only he was, you know, given a great ovation, but then he was invited to several other cities. So he traveled for several months to all the major cities, Boston, New York, you know, all the other places, you know, spreading this message of Vedanta. So there is a very nice story about Swami Vivekananda ji. So he was one time, early morning, a person came to him and bowed down. And he says, Swamiji, I want to know God. I want to reach God. He said, that's very good. So what do you do? He says, well, I go and pray in the temple. I sit for meditation, but my mind doesn't stay on the Lord. So what happens? You know, when I sit for meditation, which happens to all of us, you sit for meditation and what happens? Thought of business comes, or money, or children, or wife, or work, or what am I going to do? What did I not do so far? Or what happened yesterday, in the past, present, and future? And so I'm thinking about all those things. And he says, Swamiji, I just cannot concentrate. And if I don't concentrate, how will I get the Lord? Swamiji says, well, okay. I'll let you know shortly. So he said, okay. So Swamiji will tell me. It was early morning and they hadn't taken a bath. And as you know, in olden days, they didn't have running water. So they used to take a bath in the river. So Swamiji said, come on, let's go for a bath. You know, we'll go to the river. Have you taken? I have not taken a bath. I came very early. So they both go. And so they, you know, get into the river. They take off their upper shirt and all and get into the river. And as you know, when you get into the river, you kind of, you know, dip your head to wash your head and your face. And also this man put his head down and Swamiji caught his neck and pushed it in the water. Pushed it hard and he's struggling. He's trying to pull his head out and he can't, because Swamiji had not only his spiritual power, he had done a lot of yoga. He was very powerful. And this man is struggling and trying to get his head. He can't even breathe. He's almost half dead. And finally, he thought, I'm going to die. And then as he was just about, Swamiji releases his neck and he comes out coughing and he has swallowed some water. And he says, what kind of a sadhu are you? I came to you for advice and you almost killed me. So Swamiji just smiled and said, tell me one thing. He says, when your head was in the water, what were you thinking? He said, I was thinking I have to get my breath. I have to breathe. I have to breathe. Really? Yeah, that's all I was thinking, breath. So at that time, did you think about your wife or your child or your stock market or your business or your work or what happened in the past, what happened in the future? Did you think of any of those? No, Swamiji, all I was thinking was breath, breath and breath. He said, that's how you have to think about God. Think about him just as that kind of desire you have to, just that desire for breath, that I have to have my next breath. So that kind of love you have to have for God, that kind of devotion, that kind of desire, that this is what I want. Look at Mirabai, look at Jesus, look at Buddha, look at Shankaracharya, look at, that's what they said, look at Prannaji, God alone I want, I do not want anything else. So when that kind of devotion you have for the Lord, that kind of, then you will, you're bound to get him. But see, you and I, theek hai, Bhagawan mil gaye to mil gaye, you know, if I find him, I find him. It's like I'm walking on the street and then God will appear, you know, here I am. Oh God, you are here? Good. I was looking for you. That's not going to happen. You have to make him your primary goal. Like a person climbing Mount Everest. Does he think about his wife or children or business or money? No, I have to reach the top of Mount Everest. The 2 or 3 weeks when he's climbing, that is his goal. There might be avalanche, there may be cold, there may be his bones are hurting, his muscles are tired, he has no air. But no, I have to reach the top, you know, like Hillary and Tan Seng and all. So that kind of single-pointed, unswerving devotion. Again, if people say, you know, does that mean that I should not do anything else? No. All my activities can continue, but with the idea that all my activities are serving the Lord, I'm working for the Lord. And slowly, as my mind becomes purer, as I have get a little bit older, I become financially comfortable, I'm a little more mature in my thinking, then slowly withdraw from the world. You know, I don't need to go to unnecessary parties. I don't need to unnecessarily spend time on the internet, read useless books, watch useless TV, spend my hours watching soaps. No, my time that I have, and everybody has time. Everybody has the same 24 hours. Swami Chinmayananda had the same 24 hours. Shankaracharya had the same. You and I had the same. But how much did they accomplish in their life? So the point is that they were focused. That is my goal. That is my purpose. So I have to make that my goal. And as I am now the stage where we are, most of us are now, and we're not studying, we are stable, our children are relatively stable, settled. So as they become settled, let us spend more and more time in spiritual pursuits, more and more time in studying, more and more time in, you know, listening to Swamiji's, listening to Mahatmas. We have beautiful teachers here. Swami Ishwarananda-ji is coming October 24th to 27th. So take this opportunity to meet these Mahatmas and learn from them and make my life a spiritual journey so that at the end of the life, I can look forward, look back and say, oh Lord, I came here to do your work. I have done it. I am closer to you now as when I was at birth. I have given more than I take. You know, in the pledge we always chant, giving more than we take and producing more than what we consume. So let us live a life so that you can look back and be proud of what you have accomplished. And then you can face the Lord without fear. They say that is, you know, the Lord will judge. Actually, the Lord doesn't judge. It is we, our own actions. But even if you believe in that, okay, Lord is standing, you can hold up your head high. I did what I was supposed to in this life. And that is the essence of this verse. That is Sattvic Dhriti. Any questions or any comments?
All the meditations that we do basically are suppressing our thoughts.
Right? Yes, quietening the thoughts, yes.
Right. So how do we withdraw from the thoughts too, from the mind?
Actually, that's a very good question. Actually, thoughts should not be suppressed. Because if you forcefully suppress the mind, I'm not going to think. All that will do is give you a headache, will give you strain. So what we do is that we, first of all, you start with the attitude that I am not a man or a woman, I'm not a husband or a wife, I am a seeker of truth. And you start your journey and then you follow the steps. you relax your body, you observe your breath, you take a deep breath, you chant the mantra. So by doing these processes, especially breathing and chanting the mantra, so you breathe in, Om Namah Shivaya, you know, like that. You chant your mantra as you breathe in and out. So what that will do is automatically will slow down the activity of the mind. The mind's activity, you do not control it forcefully that I'm not going to think. Like if I tell you now, don't think of bananas, what will you do? You'll start thinking of bananas, right? I say, don't think of a camel, the rest of the class. So you, if you tell your mind not to do something, the mind will do it. So what you have to do is direct, I say, instead of camel, not think of elephant. Now your mind is channeled, okay, I have to think of elephant. So give the mind something to think of. And what is that? Think about the Lord. So you channel your mind in the Lord, and you can either think about the form of the Lord, you know, people meditate on form, or think about the Lord within the life principle, the consciousness. So the mind that has been quietened through observing the breath and chanting Om or chanting the mantra is now directed either inward to the Lord's presence or to the Lord's form. And then that quiet mind, when it is chanting, slowly what will happen? The mind will disappear. The mind will disappear in the silence of the self. So it's a gradual process, and with practice it happens. But if you're forcefully trying to subjugate the mind, it doesn't work. But thank you, that's a good point.
So even if you constantly think about the thoughts,
right,
they eventually your mind will run out of the thoughts and you have nothing else to think.
Right.
So
you can. There's a technique called the thought observation, where you watch your mind. And when you watch the mind becomes slow. Because a watched mind is a quiet mind. So you observe the thoughts standing back as the witness. And also as you reduce your vasanas, your selfish tendencies, then your mind becomes quieter. So doing service, you know, remembering the Lord, all those things, doing unselfish work, all that reduces the thoughts. Yes, and a quiet mind is ready for meditation. Yes.
It seems like when you think about controlling breath and you're going deep inside, feeling the vibrations of your body, the interactions of those vibrations.
There has to be, ultimately, if you're thinking of a form like Jesus or, you know, Krishna, yeah, it doesn't have to be. But you have to direct your mind's attention higher. The Lord within the self is a higher. It is the Lord himself that is within. So either you direct your mind's attention to the Lord within, or some people may contemplate on a form. But meditation basically, but see, one is you're just quietening your mind. But then that quiet mind has to be directed higher. Otherwise, it just becomes a quiet mind. Then you're only doing the first four. Controlling the senses, the breath, and the exercises. But then you withdraw and you concentrate on the higher. And that is meditation. So there is a higher. It's not, so that is God. We can call it God within, God without, all pervading. But meditation just on, like, so I tell you, then why don't you start meditating on Coca-Cola? Say Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. That is also meditation, right? Or Sprite or whatever drink you like. Lemonade. No, the meditation has to be directed higher, or you cannot be meditating on internet, for example. You know, that is also all pervading, right? Internet. So you say, I meditate on internet. No, the mantra has to be a spiritual mantra, and it has to take your mind upward.
But even when you say the word higher, you're defining God with a word.
No, see, for this intellect, it needs the word. But ultimately, you have to go beyond the word. Ultimately, the intellect dies. The mind shuts down. The intellect ends. And then you experience that nothingness. But that is something which cannot be described. It can only be experienced. You're right. At the final stage, even that definition of God disappears. The form disappears. And you and that meditator and the meditated become one. Then there is nothing. But until you reach that state, you need a goal. You need a purpose. You need to concentrate on. That's why the samadhi is the merger. In that, there is no form. There is no God. That you and God are one. There is only oneness. That is Advaita, where there is only one, and even that is with the meditator meditating, meditated upon, all three disappear into that one. So that is the state you are talking about. But most of us are not there yet.
Even the number one is a definition.
Yeah, but I agree with you. They're all definitions, because you have to talk either in English, Hindi, or Sanskrit. If you tell me, describe meditation, I have to talk in some language that you understand. But ultimately, it goes beyond language, beyond definition. Even the one is not, is a, you're right. There is no words to describe that. That's why even the, all the great yogis, and they all say, even Prananaji in the Bani says, he says, I'm not able to describe that state. But I have no choice, because I need to explain to you. It's like a 3 or 4 year old girl asks you, you know, what is marriage? And she says, I want to know. Now, she cannot understand all the things, but you try to explain it to her in her simple words. But ultimately, she has to grow up and experience the totality of marriage or motherhood. So similarly, the saints are trying to explain to us, because we are childlike. We are 3 and 4 year old, so they are trying to explain to us in these words, which we can understand, but the knowledge is beyond words. You're absolutely right. Even one is a, yeah, there's no description. You cannot describe it. That's what they say. I haven't experienced it, so please. I'm just repeating what the Mahatma say. Yes.
And I'm also thinking about, we talk about a walking meditation, and I'm not even sure.
Yeah. So yeah, mindfulness or walking meditation, anything, this all comes up to concentration. So where you are quietening the mind and then concentrating on becoming a witness, watching the mind, watching your body. So you, what you are doing is you are identifying with the watcher, the one who is watching the body, the one. So slowly your attention is going away from who is walking to who is watching the walker. So that I am. So that is mindfulness, takes your mind's attention away from the witnessed to the witnessing consciousness.